Blog Talk Radio.
Show here on blogtalkradio.com. This is, what are we looking at? Oh, we're looking at May. Yeah, May already. May 2nd of 2017, and we're broadcasting live from the DFW Metroplex area of the great state of Texas. I'm your host, Mike Henderson, and with me, my co-host, Crystal Senegal. How you doing, Crystal?
I'm good. How are you?
I am thoroughly exhausted.
Me too.
It's been busy. I mean, like, I'm now getting to the point where I'm actually starting to feel my age.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you get past 50, and at one point you feel kind of rejuvenated, and the other part you feel like, you know what? What in the world is going on?
Exactly.
And yeah, so like, I'm just really truly feeling the pain here as well. But this is getting. Well, I mean, I guess I'm finally creeping up on the note. 50, you know, turn 53, and you start running around and doing some of everything, and before you know it, here we go. I mean, just absolutely, totally 100% crazy, though. So, but other than that, though, I'm good, though. I'm totally good. When I wake up in the morning, I'm ready to attack the day, but it seemed like, you know, as soon as 5 o'clock comes around, though, the only thing you want to do is just either have a Chardonnay or some ice cream and go to sleep. Well, not Chardonnay with ice cream, just one or the other, because that could be totally messed up, though. But tonight, it was roundtable time, and I am waiting by our guest that should arrive as well, though, and it will be our actress, producer, Melody Brooke, and model actress, Daphne Green, here to actually discuss with the women's roundtable, though. It's kind of like a follow-up of what the men did 2 weeks ago, though, and I have to say, those brothers got on the show and literally lit things up as well. That was absolutely it was wild. I mean, we had a very long and spirited conversation about some of everything, though. But before we get into that, I want to bring up the recent incident that actually happened this past Saturday in the Dallas, Texas area. That was dealing with 15-year-old Jordan Edwards. And this is just, you know, tragic, you know, to say the least, that, you know, we lost another young black male to something that really, truly makes no sense at all, though, when it comes to how this whole thing was handled. According to this story, though, this actually comes from the International Business Times. The 15-year-old Jordan Edwards was fatally shot in the head by a Texas police officer after leaving a party on Saturday. The Dallas County Medical Examiner said the death was a homicide resulting from a rifle wound to the head. The 15-year-old was a freshman at Mesquite High School in Mesquite, Texas, a popular football player and academically gifted student. Edwards was leaving the party with some of his friends when police arrived to respond to a 911 call complaining of drunken juveniles. Now, the Balkspings Police Department originally said Edwards was in the passenger seat of a car that was moving toward the officer in an aggressive manner. Police Chief Jonathan Haber said Monday, however, that video from the scene showed just the opposite, that the car was moving forward as the officers approached. Edwards sitting in the passenger seat of the car was killed with a shot to the head. And then there was no weapons involved. There's no aggressive behavior. These were not suspects, says Lee Merritt, a lawyer for the Edwards family. The lone motive they had for the murder was that the vehicle was being used as a weapon, and now that is no longer there. Now, having been a police officer before, and having, like, actually, like, you know, dealt with these cases over and over and over and over again about the idea of justifiable, you know, situations like that when it comes to the police, here we have, once again, another situation where the, you know, an incident was reported, police action was taken, and a life was lost. And now it seems as like the one of the officers that was involved in it has been fired. And now it's going to be the thing of whether or not they're actually going to actually, now it's going to be the thing of whether or not they're actually going to press charges when it comes to this situation. This is, you know, I've always said, and I continue to say this, though, because, you know, the ones that actually, like, will say, you know, try to defend the police and this guy and the other, though, they're running out of excuses now. They really are. In all honesty, they're running out of excuses for this unacceptable behavior, though. If you have, even with that as well, though, because I know here in Dallas, there is a strict policy from DPD, Dallas Police Department, though, as far as, like, actually, like, going after fleeing suspects. You don't, and even across the nation, though, where there have been situations where police have shot at fleeing suspects, it's not warranted anymore. You know, in other words, like, if you can't catch them on foot, no, you don't try to catch them with a bullet. And if nothing else, with this particular situation, though, it, you know, it, to me, when it actually made more sense to actually to deal with the driver as opposed to the passenger, why would you fire into the why would you fire into the passenger side? Why would you not actually try to at least apprehend them or like pin them in or something like that as well, though? And then, you know, they're not even trying to really, you know, the police chief, you know, wants to admit the discrepancies with the department, even with the original statements. Because at first they were saying that, you know, there was violent behavior or there was aggressive behavior on the part of the driver driving towards them. And now you find that it was the opposite. But the truth comes out, though, because they tried to throw a statement there that said that that the vehicle was coming at them. And then you turn around and find out that that wasn't the case. Now, when are we going to wind up actually getting to the point to where we start getting after these individuals for lying on a report, for putting out a false statement? Now,
didn't they lose his job, though?
Yeah, what's that?
Didn't they fire the guy?
Yeah, they fired him as well, though. But now, you know, now they're wondering whether or not he's actually whether they can actually prosecute him for murder. Now, on some grounds it is, but some grounds they say it isn't. Now, the problem I got with that is this going to be another situation where somebody skates because of that? Is it going to be another situation where, you know, even though you fired him from his job, somebody else decides to go and pick him up because they still want to play that old boy, that good old boy mentality game? That's what keeps bad cops on the force. It isn't about the idea of them actually being good people. It's about the idea of actually trying to keep that good old boy mentality going. And I'm sorry, that's crazy. So, you know, you're still looking at this, you know, you look at this situation, and it's happened more often than not, though. It's not just that one incident. It's several where, you know, cops either, they either do something about these individuals or they don't. They either, like, find a way to actually, like, you know, prosecute them or they won't. And most of the time, they don't. They do not. They try to look for some way, some legal loophole or some legal precedent that doesn't actually hold them responsible for anything, though. In other words, we're going to put all the responsibility on the individual that was killed, but not put any responsibility on the individual that pulled the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
It's like with Alton Sterling's case. You know, just recently they found that they weren't going to, like, the Department of Justice is not going to charge those officers with his death.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but. And then, you know, it's almost like you're piecemeal, though. It still looks like if you're a cop and you commit something like that, you know, there's a real good chance you're going to get off because they're going to, like, look at it, well, you know, cops face this every day. They do with this. They deal with that. Okay, all well and fine, though. I've done that job. I understand where you're coming from with that to a certain degree, though, but that should not in any way, shape, form, or fashion be your license to kill. It shouldn't. Well, you have departments and departmental policies that enable people like that. They enable them to do that as well, though, because you figure, like, you can just shoot somebody and not have to worry about it. It's probably the biggest carcass shift that exists, period, right now when it comes to law enforcement and justice. When it comes to the Justice Department, you're too busy trying to actually keep the whole of the department together, as opposed to what's doing the right in the best interest of the of the community and the general public at large. Though, because think about it, it happens more often than not now. It's not. This wasn't just a fluke deal like that. This is part of a growing trend where you have police officers that are not in any way, shape, form, or fashion being held too accountable for their actions. But yet still, you're still going to hold the general public responsible for theirs. Okay? To me, it should be like this, Crystal. Nobody should be above the law. I mean, nobody. Nobody is above the law. You know, I know it's going to sound like that movie 300, you know, where, hey, Spartan law, everybody goes in from the king all the way down to the lowest subject. And nobody is above the law. Nobody. But they don't want to do that, though, because guess what? If you actually do that, and if you actually put something like that into effect where nobody's above the law across the board in the United States, though, you're going to have a lot of people in jail, a lot of them.
Yeah.
But once again, you got people that are too busy trying to play that good old boy game, okay? And that is what actually has everybody in an uproar. That is what actually has everybody, like, wondering what's up when it comes to this kind of stuff like that. When are you going to wind up actually holding the individuals in power responsible? And nobody wants to do it. Nobody truly wants to even try to do it in any way, shape, form, or fashion. And that is a problem. Here's another young man, 15 years old, that lost his life for something that could have been, prevented. Totally could have been prevented as well, but nobody decided to go there. Nobody tried to do that at all. They didn't try to de-escalate the situation. And that's the other thing, too, when it comes to law enforcement, though. Why did we keep seeing these incidents where instead of de-escalating the situation, they escalate and spiral out of control? You know, we saw that with Philando Castile when, it was a traffic stop. He had a gun in the car. He had a permit for the gun. And instead of actually, clearing that up and checking that out, it resulted in somebody pulling a gun and shooting this man right there in the car next to his woman and his child. And then the cop's freaking out. You heard it on tape. He's freaking out. She's freaking out. You know, what's going on as well, though, because instead of actually calming things down and de-escalating the situation, you let it spiral out of control. And that's the one thing that seems like these cops are just simply not trained on. And when I was in law enforcement, that's one of the first things, when the academy, that's one of the first things they taught us, how to de-escalate that situation as well, though. If you want to be in control of the situation, you got to whittle that down. You can't let it actually spiral out of control and expect to actually solve it with a gun. And the whole time I was there, the whole 6 years I was there, though, yeah, I got in situations of plenty, though, but when the real tense one actually came about, I spent more time using my mouth and my brain than my badge and my gun. Because the idea was to actually talk them down. So that way, at the very least, you're going home alive. And they're going to remain alive that way, though. They may have gone to jail, but they were still at least alive when they did it. But you have these cops that figure, that they simply can't do that, though. And then there's some people that actually will say, well, you don't understand how hard that job is. Yes, I do. There was nothing in the rule book that said shoot first, shoot last, shoot some more, and then try to ask a question. But, the more it happens, especially when it comes to children, like the Tamir Rice case, which to me, in all honesty, is still, one of the most blatantly silliest things that should have never, ever happened. And you're trying to tell me that this 11-year-old looked like a grown man. Still trying to find ways to justify that shooting. And then you have other people on the outside talking about where he was a thug. He had a gun. He had a toy. So you're telling me that if a white kid has a toy gun, it's a toy. If a black kid has a toy gun, he's a thug. It's a weapon. He's a threat. There was a Facebook posting one time, though, where they had three white kids holding weapons right next to a picture of three black kids holding weapons. The white kids were just, according to some people, though, were just individuals, just learning how to shoot, and they're patriots. Black kids, on the other hand, were automatically considered thugs, automatically. So now we're talking about perception. In other words, as soon as you see that, that automatically turns that into a threat. To me, that's the issue. That's a bona fide issue, a straight up problem. And I truly have a problem with that altogether as well, though, because that's not correct threat assessment at all. You know, we're still going by that perception thing, though. If you think that somebody's going to do something to you, though, that's it, though. And even in my career, you know, where, you know, we had apprehended a guy who had been breaking into cars stealing CDs, you would take a look at him, and you wouldn't think for at all that he, according to, if you go by, I guess, the norm, would even be close to the idea of being like a thief. Clean cut, well-dressed, well-spoken, apparently educated, but yet still, he was a thief. You would think Pookie down the street, you know, wearing like cut off, you know, wearing sagging jeans, dreads, a t-shirt with a marijuana leaf on the front, you know, would be the threat. No, it's this clean cut kid who's running around breaking into cars at random on a daily basis and probably stole from a neighborhood of maybe like, you know, maybe about, you know, $5,000-$6,000 worth of CDs, you know, over a period of time. But once again, here's a kid perceived as a threat that wound up losing his life because somebody didn't actually intervene the right way. And I'll say there are cops that'll say there is no right way. That's a lie. Yes, there is. But the thing is, you have to be more proactive when it comes to the idea of actually doing that as well, though. Especially when it comes to that dealing with kids, though, now these kids are only going to actually think of themselves as targets. They're only going to think that they lost a friend, you know, presumably for nothing, when they're just simply trying to leave a party. And now we have to kind of wonder, who's the aggressor? Is it the general public? Is it the youth? Is it the police? A lot of people, like, last year when all those shootings were going down, a lot of people had some misgivings about their interactions when it came to the police department, though. I can't say that I blame them, though, because even I had some misgivings about that, because I didn't know, you know, whether or not the next time I'm pulled over by a cop, that's going to be my last day. But it kind of depends on the situation and depends on the cop. Now, a lot of people didn't understand, dare I say, white people didn't understand that, though, because they couldn't wrap their head around it as well. Because they figured, like, okay, cops are going to be friendly to you, though. You know why? Because they don't perceive you as a threat. When it comes to the average black male, on the other hand, if he's pulled over by the police, in a lot of ways, he is considered a threat. You know, and then the shootings that, you know, that took place last year, and even the year prior to that as well, though, what's the first thing the people, the cops used to say, though? They said the thing about Michael Brown. He was perceived as a threat. Lando Castile, he was perceived as a threat. Alton Sterling, perceived as a threat. Tamir Rice, perceived as a threat. We didn't even go so far as actually talking about, like, Trayvon Martin, perceived as a threat. And it seemed like that's the one common denominator when it comes to the idea of threat assessment that everybody seemed to actually throw out there more than anything else. He is perceived as a threat. But they never really do that about individuals that actually are threats. They didn't think about, Dylan Roof. They didn't perceive him as being a threat. Because when they pulled him over, they, you know, at one point their guns were drawn. But then before they removed them out of the car, they holstered their weapons. I saw the video. They holstered their weapons. They pulled him out constantly. And he had a loaded gun in the car. You know, he wasn't even that, I guess it wasn't that big of a deal, though, because they even stopped at some fast food restaurant and fed the boy before they actually took him in. He wasn't perceived as a threat. But when it came to Alton Sterling, you know, selling CDs, and you know, on the front of a convenience store, who had been there for months, and everybody knew him, though, he was perceived as a threat, and he was unarmed. So, I mean, when it comes to this kind of stuff, I really don't know. I honestly do not know. You know, where do we go at this point as well? Because, I mean, it seems like some people want to consider this like something acceptable. They want to consider it like an acceptable norm to where we just have to get used to it because that's just the way things are. No, it's not how the way things are. That's how some people want them to be. They want to actually, like, put it in their head and want us to actually believe that we are threats period. We are dangerous. We have, you know, we have these ulterior motives. We want war. We want to destroy things. That's why that most black men simply want to live. You know, they, you know, I could really care less about the idea of hunting down every white person I know and killing them. I mean, and yeah, there's some of us that I'm not saying all of us though. There's some that, you know, like Michael Xavier Johnson, who instigated that shooting here in Dallas, right in the middle of a protest rally. You know, who pretty much like saw all cops as equals. The cops that he shot and killed, there were four of them, had nothing to do with the, you know, with the Alton Sterling case, with the Philando Castile case, had nothing to do with that at all, nothing whatsoever though. But yet still, he decided to go and actually go after cops that had nothing to do with either one of those incidents, take four innocent like cops' lives, and then thinking that was justifiable though. There's some people that call him a hero. I call him a nut job because that's exactly what the hell he was. He wasn't a hero. He was a criminal because he committed murder. And then interviews were saying like, okay, well, Black Lives Matter is a problem too. No, they're not. If Black Lives Matter really wanted to actually go after the police, they would have gone after them in a big way. If they really wanted to kill police officers, they could have actually done it that day at that rally. But they didn't. They did not. And they're still not trying to do that as well, though. If nothing else, they've been really trying to. The problem that I see that law enforcement has when it comes to Black Lives Matter is, though, law enforcement wants Black Lives Matter and black people in general to own up to their responsibilities, though. But they don't want. But the law enforcement community as a whole doesn't want to take responsibility for theirs. They don't. They figure like, well, I'm police, I can do whatever you want to, though. And somebody's actually told me that one time. I'm a police, you know, you police, we can do whatever you want to. Really? Go rob a bank and see what happens. No, you can't. You simply cannot. There's certain things you simply cannot do as a cop. But people think that you can. Well, he's police, he can do it like that. And then in a lot of ways, they're starting to actually make that true, because now you can be a police officer. And they ought to just make that part of, you know, of the recruitment poster. Come on in, join the police department. You can be a cop because you can get away with anything. It doesn't matter. You could kill somebody in cold blood and literally get away with it. You can kill somebody without justification and literally get away with it. You can even make a mistake and practically get away with it. For example, that one incident though where this guy that was he was like a counselor or a clinical psychologist, something like that, though, dealing with one of his patients who got out of hand during the police call. The cop said he was aiming for the patient, but he shot the guy, and the guy was black. He shot the person that was trying to help and de-escalate that situation. He's the one that got shot. Why? Because, and I'm sorry, you know, bullets kind of work like this. You aim them, and they usually generally go where you aim at. And there are too many mistakes that are being made when it comes to it as well, though. But there are too many lives being lost or people being hurt or worse because cops aren't thinking. And I don't want to hear about the rigors of the job. I don't want to hear about how bad it is. I don't want to hear anything about that as well, because it doesn't make any sense to me. It simply does not. But once again, you got people that will turn around and tell you in a minute that it's a hard job. You can't do it well. Well, somewhere online, you had to know how to do your job. You had to be trained. You had to be educated on how to deal with that, to deal with certain situations. Because it's not back in the day, like back in the 30s or 40s, where they simply called you in, gave you a gun and a badge, and said, go be a police officer. No. No. They had to train you about situations, though, because policy dictates that. Policy dictates exactly how you're trained and why you're trained. Certain situations come about, they look that over, they actually make a decision on exactly how that should be handled. That's policy. And then they actually disseminate that to the departments, to the, you know, to the leadership, to the subordinates. The officers have to be trained on how to deal with situations. In my academy, they did that on a regular basis. We had to know what to do when it came to a given situation. We didn't know how to handle certain scenarios. They gave us certain scenarios as training and saw how we react to it. They also taught us how to deal with certain difficult situations, like talking to suicidal suspects, like talking to, like not dealing with suspects, like how to actually handle that as much as humanly possible. You know, and I know every situation is different. It's not always going to be textbook. But at least that was a starting point to where you actually could deal with that in a, you know, in a certain manner. And I'm sorry, had, like for example, with the Tamir Rice deal, I have never, ever heard of any part of training, any part of procedure, and anything. And any, you know, so, say for something you actually saw in a movie, to where you're going to actually come toward an armed suspect in a vehicle and literally shoot them at point-blank range without even assessing whether or not they actually are armed. And even though the police, the initial call said it could be a toy that he has, nobody bothered to find out if it was. There was nobody else in the area, in the immediate area. He was standing alone underneath like a little gazebo type deal as well that was in the park. And I'm quite sure, in all honesty though, quite sure that they're there that actually held him again. And really, to engage a possibly armed suspect that close, you're risking your life too. But yet still, though, at the same time, there was like a incident in San Diego, California, where a guy actually had a gun and was firing it in a park. Several officers responded, but they engaged him at a distance. They didn't run up on him and shoot him at a distance of less than 5 feet in less than 2 seconds. They held him at bay and fired beanbags at him. But yet still, you saw fit to go and actually like shoot an 11-year-old. The same way somebody, this officer in Box Spring, saw fit to shoot a 15-year-old in the head with a rifle shot. But once again, here we go. and the more I think about it, and, you know, social media is actually going to go crazy with it, though. They generally do. They're not, you know, you're going to be upset to a certain degree when it comes to things as well, though, but nobody's really actually doing anything about it, and that's the problem. And even like with some shootings that have occurred where individuals are, were being held, you know, and also like prosecuted as well, like former officer Michael Schlager. He pled guilty for the shooting of Walter Scott, you know. Yeah, you know, he pled guilty to violating the unarmed black motorist civil rights when he shot him 5 times in the back. Yeah, I mean, and he, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, will deal with that, though. Like, and just like what's said with Alvin Sterling, they're not gonna charge the Baton Rouge officers with the shooting of Alvin Sterling. They're not. They're not gonna do it. You know, and that was probably one of the most horrific ones ever. But they still feel like, you know, that it was justified. You know, and the DOJ, you know, should be the main advocates for the idea of actually doing something with that as well, though. But then they said they're not going to do any, you know, they closed the probe, and they're not going to, you know, there's a Tuesday afternoon, the Sterling family had yet to be informed by the Justice Department of the decision, and unclear how and when the department will announce its findings. And the case will be the first time on the Attorney General Jeff Sessions, here we go, that the department has publicly declined to prosecute officers investigated for possible wrongdoing in a high-profile case. And the officers and the officials in Baton Rouge are pretty much like, you know, bracing themselves for the possible reaction there, though. You can kind of get an idea exactly what that's going to be like. You know, and then some of these individuals like Jeff Sessions, who really has no grip on that bit of reality at all, and probably won't, because he doesn't actually see any value in it as well, though, like that. You know, and then when the protests start, the first thing he's one of them talking about is, oh, I don't understand why they're in an uproar. You know, the man was this, the man was that. No. There are too many tragedies like this, you know. And then with Philando Castile's deal, you know. And then here we go, you know, another, you know, and then that led to the shooting in Dallas. And then there was also another one, another shooting where another gunman similar to Michael Xavier Johnson, started targeting police officers in Baton Rouge. He started he killed three police officers in Baton Rouge. You know, and with Officer Sterling, though, they're talking about, like, officers said that it was reported that a man had threatened someone with a gun. And it says, like, that Alton Sterling fit the description of that man. Instead of actually finding out what was going on, and then somebody yells and got a gun, though, and then all of a sudden they shot him. And they said they observed the butt of a gun in Sterling's front pants pocket. They issued an investigation whether Sterling was reaching for the weapon when he was shot and killed. And the Justice Department declined to comment. See, it's when they get to the point to where they decline to comment about certain facts that you really start wondering. It's kind of like earlier this week, I believe, when I'm going to call him number 45 because that's where everybody else is calling him, had an interview where they were asking about his claims that Obama had wiretapped him. Now, he said he stepped by the claims, but when they started actually prying deeper, though, he cut the, you know, like 45 cut the interview off. He said, "We're done," and walked away. Why is that? Because when you actually start nailing these individuals to the wall when it comes to that crap, then they have nothing to say. You know, and with this deal with Alton Sterling, the Department of Justice failure to communicate with the community has created angst and nervousness, and I fear carries the potential for increased tension between the community and law enforcement. There's a representative Cedric L. Richmond, Democrat, whose congressional district includes part of Baton Rouge, wrote in a letter to Sessions on Friday that it's inappropriate against the interest of the public safety to allow this level of uncertainty to continue. And substantiating federal civil rights charges is extraordinarily difficult, requiring prosecutors to present evidence that might speak to an officer's intent at the time of the incident. And see, and even in the Obama administration, federal prosecutors declined to bring such charges in high-profile incidents. Like in the case of Darren Wilson, the white police officer who shot and killed Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri in 2014, the Justice Department found no evidence upon which prosecutors can rely to disprove Wilson's stated subjective belief that he feared for his safety. Now, investigators reached a similar conclusion in the fatal 2015 shooting of Jamar Clark in Minneapolis, concluding they cannot prove the use of force was objectively unreasonable based on all the surrounding circumstances. See, the civil liberties, and this is according to the Washington Post, civil liberties advocates fear, though the Justice Department under Sessions and President 45 might even be more reluctant to prosecute alleged wrongdoing by police. And 45 is cast itself as a pro-law enforcement president, and Sessions has previously questioned broader police reforms. But it has, you know, and Sessions ordered the Justice Department to review the court-mandated reform agreements. It has with troubled police departments across the country, and he has said he's worried that such agreements might bar aggressive police tactics. See, and Sessions also have, unlike the previous Attorney General Loretta Lynch, offered a tactic endorsement of what's known as the Ferguson effect, which refers to the contested idea that police might be afraid to get out of their cars and enforce the law for fear of ending up on viral video. That's the reason why I want to try to shut that down as well, though. But by the same token, you know, how else are you going to wind up getting these departments and these officers be held responsible for their actions? What is it actually going to take, though? You don't want to be caught on video. Then if you don't want to do that, though, then own up to what you're doing. That's all you have to do when it comes to it as well, though. Own up to what you're doing. Own up to what you're actually trying to do as well, though. But nobody wants to do that as well, though. You still want to actually treat it to where, like, these individuals can go and get off, regardless of what's going on, and give them a pass for doing something wrong. Okay, you still have to be responsible for that, period. You have to have some measure of responsibility when it comes to that, and a lot of people don't want to do it. They don't want to. They don't want to hold a police officer responsible, though. But again, you're putting them in a position right now where you're actually painting bullseyes on their backs right now as it stands, though, because you're not getting them responsible for what they're doing, though, and you're putting other officers in harm, retaliation, because you're not holding these individuals that actually commit these acts responsible for their actions. That's about as easy as checks and balances can go when it comes in as well, though. If you have an officer that unjustifiably actually commits that type of act, he should be held accountable for it. You should not actually come up with legislation or ideas or mandates that actually like just curb that, or now that curb it or water it down or totally dismiss it. Now you are creating an environment to where like the general public is not going to trust the police. They have not become police officers. They're not even public service. They are stormtroopers now. We just turned into Star Wars. They are stormtroopers. Because now you're pretty much giving them a license to kill. And somewhere along the line, somebody's going to wind up having a problem with that, though, and somebody's going to take action, the same way Michael Xavier Johnson did here in Dallas. They're going to be pissed. They're going to be fed up. They're going to be armed. And somebody is going to pay the price for that. They didn't even necessarily even that. And even he showed they don't even have to be in the same city when the incident occurred for somebody to fall victim. Because none of those officers in Dallas had anything to do with any of those other shootings. They were guilty. He considered them guilty by association for the simple fact that they were police officers. So he made a blanket judgment right there that all police officers are evil. The same way some of these police departments are treating the general public, that all black people are suspect. And it's circle effect. It's going to be this vicious circle that a lot of us are going to be wondering whether or not we're going to survive. And even with that, what kills me even more, though, that in the midst of all this actually going on, and then most of the back and forth when it comes to, like, social media and people's feelings and everything else about it as well, though, they forgot about Dylan Noble, a 19-year-old white man that was killed in San Diego by police. Nobody came to his aid at all on either side of the track, though. Maybe the family maybe protested a little bit, though, but that died away. And this was a white kid that was killed by cops. And nobody said anything about that. Nobody protested it. Nobody brought it up. Nobody said a damn thing about it at all. It's like this kid just his entire existence just literally fell away because nobody did anything about it. Nobody said anything about it. There were no protests. There were no, intervention as far as I'm concerned. There were no massive investigation behind it as well, though. But the media immediately, they may have, touched on it just barely. It barely made the news cycles even online. But when it came to the other ones, though, they were all over the place. And I don't know if it was just a case of the idea that they wanted to actually hype up the racial tensions. They wanted to just on the border and the idea of sensationalism. Because they sure as hell didn't say anything about Dylan Noble. Not a hell of a whole lot anyway. And I think his case and even the video that they showed was just as horrendous as any others that we saw. And to me, it isn't even about the idea, it's just totally about the idea of actually being black. It's about the idea of, law enforcement running around unchecked like that. Law enforcement not trying in any way, shape, form, or fashion to do anything about that when it comes to their relationship with the general public. And then there are cops, and, there's one in particular on Facebook. I'm not going to say his name because then I got to deal with that. But he is about as disillusioned as these individuals that think it's okay for you to run around and do that. He's pro-police, which I understand, because when I was a cop, I was pro-police. But by the same time, I wasn't anti-community. I was pro-police, but I was also pro-community. I was all about the idea of really trying to bridge the gap between that, though, so when I actually deal with people in the general public, there's no fear. I had to correct a parent one time when she told her kid, see that police officer over there? He's going to take you to jail. I said, no, I'm not going to take you to jail. No, not at all. Okay? If you do something wrong, I will actually try to, help you correct it. But I'm not going to take you to jail. You're equating law enforcement with something evil, and that's not what it was originally meant to be. It wasn't originally meant to be something evil. It wasn't originally meant to be something out of control. And it most certainly wasn't meant to be a threat to the very communities it's supposed to serve. It's supposed to be an institution to where we can actually have a measure of law and order, and not just for certain people, not just for the way you look, though. And you shouldn't have to be, like, live in fear every time you see a cop roll up. You shouldn't have to even live in fear, even if you're stopped by a police officer. Now, in the midst of all this actually going on, though, I think I remarked one time in the show that I've actually been pulled over twice by police officers in two different areas. In two different areas. And I approached by the police officer in both jurisdictions. One was Farmers Branch, and the other was Arlington. Now, the Farmers Branch one, though, it was like a stop because there was a sign on the road. It was like right turn only, and I kept straight. And I didn't see the sign. But he explained to me, a lot of people, they just put it up, and a lot of people don't see the sign. So don't worry about that. And so I got a caller. I bet I know who this is, though. Hello.
Hey.
Welcome to the show.
Hey there. This is Melody. I'm so sorry. I got tied up and
Well, needless to say, don't worry about that. I kind of held it down for you a little bit as well, though. Don't even worry about it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is my actress, producer, and a good friend, Melody Brooke. I'm welcoming you to the show. And I'm giving almost 40-minute spiel about police, law enforcement, and a couple of other things as well, though. But I think I made some pretty good, decent points. So I have a good, pretty good speaking voice. But I want to get back into the meeting, and I'm going to ask you your opinion about this as well, though. This is kind of in reference to the latest incident with the shooting that actually occurred in Box Springs over the weekend.
Okay.
And this young man, 15 years old, lost his life, in the midst of the police intervening with what someone considered kids drinking. And this young man was shot and killed. And I was going over the idea of, when it comes to law enforcement and their dealings with the general public, and whether or not, people really get the idea of exactly what really needs to be done when it comes to that stuff. Because now as it stands, though, a lot of the individuals, even last year, with a lot of the police officers that were involved in the shootings that actually occurred last year, a lot of those cases may or may not be prosecuted because of what we have in place now, to where they won't actually think that what the Department of Justice, especially under Jeff Sessions, is not going to see it justifiable to try to hold these officers responsible for their actions in any way, shape, form, or fashion. And to me, that's an issue, because now, instead of actually bridging the gap between law enforcement and the community at large, you're widening it.
Yeah, I think that obviously that's a problem that we're having to face now that we didn't anticipate having to face, that would actually get less support from the federal government than what we felt like we were getting in a system that's already flawed. And, I know that I hear a lot of different discussions about, well, people should just act this way or that way. And I'm like, yes, and so should the police officers. For example, when you're in the military, they have rules of engagement that they have to live by. And apparently the police officers don't seem to have the same kinds of rules of engagement that a person in a military situation should have to adhere to. And that doesn't make sense to me.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Now, having been a police officer, you are correct about that. In the military, they do have rules of engagement. But also in law enforcement, they do have policy. As far as like crisis situation, though, crisis management as well, though, they do have that, though. The thing is, a lot of them are either ignoring it, they're not enforcing it, or they want to just, you have those mavericks out there who figure they know everything as well like that, though. And they're still actually perceiving you know, a certain part of the community at large as a threat, almost automatically. Because let's face it, though,
yeah.
like I was saying earlier, you know, about like going all the way back to Trayvon Martin. You know, before even anybody intervened, he was perceived as a threat because
right.
of the way he was dressed. You know, you're still looking at that. But at the same time, you can, you know, run up on somebody and they look a certain way, but they're not even be that way at all. But you still don't know at that point, though. But if you're going to go just by, you know, what he looks like as opposed to what he is, you know, he's already at a disadvantage.
Right. But, you know, the reality is that we all have to make judgments about our safety, and nobody has to make judgments about their safety as often as police officers do, because they're constantly moving into situations that are potentially dangerous and they're on guard. And so as a result, you know, the public has to sort of be conscious of that when they're interacting with the police. That doesn't mean that the police have a right to make a judgment about you just simply based on the way you're dressed. That's just one of the things that they need to be looking at, because they're going to be looking at everything, the way you dress, the way you act, you know, the way you speak. All of those things are going to be part of their on their radar.
Exactly. So you know, but once again, like, you know, there is no, you know, when it comes to the idea of what has already happened. And I'm still a big advocate. I'm an advocate of law enforcement. Of course I am, because I have a law enforcement background. But by the same token, I'm not anti-community either. With that being said, there has to be a way, because there's some training that needs to happen. There's some intervention that needs to happen as far as the department's concerned, though. I understand the risk. I understand the risk involved, though. I've been out there. I know what it's like. But by the same token, though, there are situations that could have very easily spiraled out of control had it not been handled a certain way.
There has to be a level of sensitivity to what is happening. You know, I've worked in, I'm a counselor. I worked in adolescent treatment centers for many years. And when I was working in the treatment centers, you know, the staff, some of the more untrained staff, the techs that were responsible for the day-to-day activities with the kids, would become sort of guard-like and militaristic with the kids. And, of course, then the kids would react badly to that, you know. And
yeah.
What we had to teach, we reversed roles. We did some trainings where we reversed the roles and showed them what it felt like to be treated that way, and how treating them, just, you know, they would still be the adults, they're still the authority, but they're sitting down with them, they're having conversations with them, they're not just standing on the side watching them and criticizing them, they're involved with them, and how that changes the whole interaction. And I think that's true, that's going to be true with the police as well. They have to start engaging with the community. And I think in Dallas, and this is the so sad thing about what happened in Dallas last year, is that Dallas has made a lot of incredible amount of progress in that area in the last several years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to take that monster step back was painful.
Yes.
And it was instigated by one individual who was fed up. Not right at all. I mean, every individual hailed Michael Xavier Johnson as a hero, and I was like, you got to be kidding. No, he's a criminal.
No.
You
know?
No. He's a flat-out criminal as well.
But at the same time, you know, he was responding to what's happening in the media, and I think this is the thing that a lot of us tend to forget, is that, you know, I'm older, I've grown up, seeing all this stuff happen for generations, and that it's been happening, this abuse of authority against, anyone, but particularly against minorities, been happening my whole life and before, and yet we didn't see it in the papers every day. We didn't read about it every day. Now, because of the technologies that we have, fortunately and unfortunately, we see that it's happening. And so it's all, our awareness of it has gone tremendously higher, even though, you know, the incidents haven't increased. It's happening no more than it happened in the past, but now we see it. Now it's in our faces, and we can't deny it anymore. We can't pretend it's not there anymore, where before you could sort of go, well, so-and-so said that, but we don't know if that's what really happened. Well, now it's in our faces. We see it. We know it's happening, and it has to be addressed.
Yeah, that's true, though. But how we go about addressing it and how we go about actually dealing with it, though, and moving forward, though, is going to probably make the difference between whether or not we're going to continue to see this trend or we're going to wind up actually, like, staving it off some way, though, because someone online has got something going to break.
The way to move forward, the only way you can move forward is to have empathy happen on both sides. Both sides have to step down a little bit, get less guarded, stop blaming, and start trying to problem solve.
Yeah, but once again, you know, we have individuals that are drawing in on themselves. To a certain degree, it's understandable. But like you said, like we're going to have to run up actually like doing something to where we truly – you know, start actually bridging the gaps in between it as well. But we have to. Otherwise, we're not going to survive this. We're not going to survive this in any way, shape, form, or fashion if we don't.
No, and that's across the board in the country in lots of different areas right now. And this is one of them that's really significant to an awful lot of us because it interferes with our daily lives for some of us. We have to be able to start recognizing that we're all afraid. That we all want the same things. None of us want to be hurt. None of us want to take advantage of anybody else. None of us wants to dictate how lives are for the other person. But we end up trying to behaving as though that were the case when we feel threatened. When we feel threatened, we get kicked into this self-protective mode of behavior that causes us to act very badly toward each other. And that's the thing that has to be intervened with. And so having some understanding about that begins to shift that. And my book, it's called Oh Wow, This Changes Everything, presents a model for understanding how it is that our brains act in stress and how we can begin to move ourselves into a less egocentric place. Because what happens when we get stressed, when we get afraid, is that we go into a primitive brain reaction where we automatically go on defense mode and we become very egocentric because, you know, our survival mechanism is only interested in helping us survive. It's not really concerned with anybody else, right? So we get in that egocentric mode, and we've got to learn how to move out of that into a more compassionate place. And that's what my book's about.
Yeah, I agree. You know, even like, you know, when I served as a police officer, like, yes, I still had that survivalist mentality. I really did, though, because you never know when it comes to that. When you're in traffic, when you're going into a home at night, when you're going into a building, you know, something like that. So, you know, you really do have to kind of like, you know, have your ears, because you never know exactly what you're going to encounter. And you never know if you're really going to wind up as a student as well, though. But even with that, though, when it came to certain situations, it was still about the idea of de-escalating the situation, not letting it spiral out of control. You know,
you got to start making people feel safe. And I don't care if you're a police officer on the other end, you're the person of interest of the police officer. You have to start making the other person feel safe in order for things not to escalate. And that's true in any conflict, but particularly in that kind of a conflict.
Exactly, though. And when it comes to the idea of actually getting clarity for that, though, especially when bullets are involved, you almost actually have to be sure. You have to be sure, though, because you can't take them back. You can't, you know, once you want to actually take somebody's life, though, it's not a video game. It's over. And I would rather, you know, make sure that I can get as close, to making sure that I'm actually making the right call, which is difficult. It is difficult as hell, you know. So, you know, just like that. But it's also something you just can't throw out there because you think that no matter what's going to happen, you're going to get off. To me, that you could be enabling the wrong people in one of the worst ways. And then, like you said, like how it's going to reflect on the community and how's it going to reflect on the community, though?
That's the problem with the culture and the problem with not holding anybody ever accountable. And it's not to say that, you know, some of the time they're not doing the correct thing, even when we're not sure they are. Sometimes they are. But unless that we have a tradition, a cultural tradition of showing that when people are out of line, they're going to have to face the piper. And if they don't, then they've got all the power, you've got none, and you better just keep your mouth shut and do the best you can to keep your head down.
Yeah, exactly. And then what? You know, and,
right.
And then,
and
like,
then,
you know.
And then we're in a military state, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then next thing out, here we go.
Yeah.
Then what do we have? You know, you're gonna have that. You know, it's gonna be across the board then. And then nobody's safe. The cops are gonna be safe through retaliation, though. General public
right.
is gonna be safe because you have empower.
That's
you
right.
have like empowered
That's
empowered
exactly
cops.
Right.
Yeah, and then you know it's gonna take. Yeah.
I think that
yeah,
Chief Brown did so much good work while he was at the department in Dallas.
Yes,
I wish that he would do some consulting across the country to help people learn what he learned and implement what he implemented here that made such a big difference. Because without that implementation of that kind of a culture, nothing's going to change.
At all.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm frustrated right now because of the fact that, you know, I believe in our right to demonstrate and protest and, you know, but what good is any of that doing? It's not making any difference to the powers that be. It's, you know, it makes you feel better temporarily, but nobody's noticing. It's not making any difference. It would be different if it did make a difference, but it doesn't. And so, you know, I think we have to empower ourselves to go within the system and try to change within the system instead of just massively walking the streets. I'm not sure that's really doing much right now.
To me, I wish there was a magic bullet. You know, or magic potion that I could disseminate.
Magic potion,
just,
let's use that, yeah.
Yeah, magic potion that would,
yeah.
You know, that would really just make it all go, make it all go away. You know?
And I believe that if we can start to develop some ability to, first of all, take ownership of our own part in it, you know, which is that when you're involved in a conflict like that, you do whatever you can to help the other person feel safe. If you're the person of interest to the police officer, that you will do whatever you can do to make the other person feel safe and know that you're not aggressive. That's all you can take ownership of. And then the long term, to be able to open some discussions with these people and go, look, we know you're scared. We know that you react badly when you're scared. Let's talk about how to help you feel safer and open that kind of a dialogue.
Exactly. Now, the chief of Bulk Springs did fire that officer.
Mm.
And like I had to commend him myself. Though there was a posting on Facebook where they commended the chief. And I have to commend him as well, though, because someone online, you have to stop tolerating that type of behavior.
Yes.
You do. And there are individuals that are...
Firing isn't
that?
Enough either, because that police officer will go to another county, another state, and get hired there. That there needs to be more than just firing, but...
Exactly. Now, there's a call for prosecution. There's a call for... Now, whether we get it or not is anybody's guess. But there is a call, but there is a call for that as well, though. And that was at least the first step to let you know that, look, we're not going to do at least this department or at least this part of the law enforcement community. It's not going to tolerate that at all, though. I definitely have to commend leadership like that, though. Like Chief Brown, you know, when he was on board, though. He stood for the idea that you're dealing with that, though. Plus, he actually worked toward the idea that you're closing the gap between, you know, the community and the law enforcement community as a whole, though. Because he wanted to foster understanding. He wanted to get them to get a better understanding of the claim that as well, and not to just go wherever and just think that that's it. No. You have leadership like that recognizes the problem and isn't afraid to address it no matter what and deal with it accordingly, up to and including consequences for the individuals that actually commit certain acts, though, so much the better. But once again, you have individuals that don't want to try to play that good old moral mentality, though. To me, you can't give them a pass. I can't give so-called black-on-black crime a pass. And I won't. Because,
right.
you know, and there are people that think that, well, okay, well, you know, he's black, so he was going through this, he was dealing with that and all this stuff. Still no excuse. No excuse whatsoever, though. You still have to take responsibility for your actions. You know, coming and going.
Yeah.
Just because you're, you know, you don't have a job or what have you as well, though, does not give you the right to actually infringe on somebody else's right to live or to have what they
no,
have or anything
not.
Like that as well. It doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't. But you have people that are turning around trying to justify that, though, because of your situation, though. It's inexcusable. It doesn't make any sense. You can't make it make any sense.
Yeah.
There was an incident in Fort Worth, I believe, though, to where a young man broke into someone's house, and then the owner of the house saw him and shot him and killed him. And then relatives actually came on the news and tried to justify why he broke in and stole what he did. He was stealing. They tried to justify it. Yeah, they tried to justify it. It was absurd. And I was like, is this a prank? I mean, it made no sense whatsoever.
Right.
Yeah. Are you kidding? Is it a prank? Are you serious? I'm like, there's no way. You cannot.
Well,
in any
you
way
know, that's a victim mentality, right? That's the victim mentality, which is,
exactly,
you know,
yeah.
I'm down on my luck. I don't have any options. It's nothing is my fault. That's victim mentality. And we will do that. We'll go into that victim mode when things are falling apart. But you cannot buy into that because that is not a functional way to live. You will not survive stuck in that victim mentality.
Exactly. And we need to let that. We really need to let that go because there's no excuse for it. The same way law enforcement cannot always use the "I fear for my life" you know excuse, because sometimes you
right.
aren't. I mean, we saw that with a few cases, though, to where like the victims of the shootings were running away from the situation, and you have cops unleashing bullets behind them. You know, like, okay, how is he a threat if he's moving away from you?
Right.
Well,
right.
Yeah. You know, so there's no way to where you can justify that as well. The same way, like I said, by that
it's
same
not
token,
justifiable.
We can't,
and yet,
no,
you know,
no,
and yet they'll get away with it.
Yeah, and you know, we can't get away with, and the people that we are on the civilian side of the house can't get away with the, you know, well, you know, my circumstances were bad, and I was going through this and dealing with that,
right.
So that's why I robbed this house. And I've been like this also, Melody. I'll tell somebody in a minute, you know, and I can take it back to the streets if you need be. Get your ass off your shoulders and take responsibility for your life, no matter what
right.
you have to do. You know, if it means going through welfare programs or whatever, like, what do you have to do? Whatever you have to do, though. I could deal with welfare faster than I could deal with robbery.
Yes.
There's
always an option, you know, and it's up to the individual to figure out what that is, but certainly not resorting to hurting other people. But that often is what the only thing that people can see is their options. And, you know,
okay.
we've got to... at a community level, too, provides some options. You know, one of the issues that's a really big issue is that fewer and fewer boys are finishing high school and college.
Yeah.
And if they're not finishing high school and college, they're not getting the kind of work that's going to help them support a family.
Exactly.
And if they're not doing that, they'll start looking at other options that are you know not good for the community at large.
Mm-hmm.
So
this
is one of the prevention things that you can look at, right?
Exactly. Yeah, one of them as well. Though now I'm gonna switch gears real quick. Now and I'm gonna kind of sort of put you on the spot.
Okay.
When we're talking about politics and we're talking about number 45, and I know you're not a fan.
No.
And neither am I, because I made it more than clear that I'm truly not a fan. And to me, it just seems like it's probably one of the biggest and craziest things that we've actually done collectively as a nation ever.
Yes, I'm on board with that.
and
the interesting the interesting thing about that is that it has energized people in a way that I haven't seen them energized since the 70s. It's energized people to recognize that freedom is not free and that we have to fight for it and that we have to start paying attention to what is happening and the laws that are being passed. And, you know, there are things that the Obama administration did that I did not think were a good idea. There were things that the Clinton administration did that led to this privatization of the prison system that I am totally against. So it's not purely left-wing, right-wing. It's just a matter of recognizing what works and what doesn't and starting to fight for what you believe in.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. And I know this more than anything else when I actually, like, really look and listen as much as I care to as well, though, that it seems like now there's only one positive aspect that I can see from all of this. Now truly anybody can be president. Truly anybody can be president.
Anybody
can be president. There's no qualification. There's no ceiling. There's no precedent when it comes to that as well. But you can be president. You can run for president. You can say, you know what, the hell with whatever else I'm doing. I'm going to be president.
Yeah, the trick is, can you get enough people to follow you? And, you know, that's the whole trick, you know, which unfortunately in our celebrity worshiping culture, that is what's led us to the situation where, you know, this guy's running for president. He's a celebrity. It's, you know, worked for Ronald Reagan. It's worked for 45.
Yeah.
And it may work for the next, you know, number of presidents that we have. I don't know, you know. I do think that people will have learned a lot from this, and at least some of us will have seen enough to go, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. Possible.
Yeah.
Some of us will have done that.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, you know, back to toward the election, when, you know, everything was pretty much ready, it wasn't so final, you know, but still equally scary. I still think that John Kasich probably for the Republicans probably would have been the better choice, because here's an individual that did two things that truly impressed me. Number one, when it came to the debate, he stuck to the issues. He tried very, very hard not to get caught up in the feeding frenzy and in the back and forth there as well, though. He stuck with the issues. He stayed steady throughout the course as well, though. And number two was when Trump, you know, well, anyway, when he made it to that point as well, though, he vowed not to support the man and stuck to his guns. He didn't fold like everybody else did, though, like Ted Cruz did,
right.
like Marco Rubio,
right.
The rest of them. Like, he didn't,
yeah.
Yeah, Rick Perry. He didn't fold. He didn't fold like him as well. He didn't. You know,
yeah.
It's like they took tail and just let it go.
Yes.
And now that he's in, and he thought it was a cakewalk. And now, every time he opens his mouth, every time he tweets, every time he gets up in the, you know, like in an uproar behind whatever, though, it's like a petulant child. And as of this latest deal, when you're talking about, the Civil War, his comments about the Civil War comments, though, he sounded like an educated, petulant child.
Yes, well, doesn't he always, anyway.
And that is something, there are individuals that are really chomping at the bit of how long it's going to take before we start talking impeachment.
Well, you know, I know everybody, even before he was sworn in, we're talking about that. And, you know, it takes a huge amount of impetus, and with a majority Republican Congress, I don't know that it'll happen. It may happen after midterm elections if it shifts to a Democratic-dominated Congress. But until then, I think it's highly unlikely.
Yeah. No, we'll see. Because I'm pretty much, you know, I think I'm even done laughing. You know.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm done crying. I'm done laughing. Yeah. And at this point, the far more important thing is bridging the gaps between us, because we have, as a nation, become so incredibly polarized that we're demonizing each other instead of looking at the real problem, which is the oligarchy that has become in control of our country. That's where the real problem is. And instead, we're fighting each other and acting like that's the problem. No, that isn't the problem. We all want the same things. We want our freedom. We want our jobs. We want opportunities. We want health care. We want the same things. It's a matter of believing one way or the other is how you get there, and we shouldn't be fighting each other because we want the same things.
Yeah, exactly, though. You know, which kind of like goes, but yeah, and you're right. Because, like, after the election, there were a lot of people that were worried. And a lot of friends of mine were definitely concerned. They were definitely worried about it quite a bit, though. And I can understand why they were. Because they were concerned about an uncertain future underneath, under like a 45 administration.
Yeah.
But I told them that we're still going to have to find a way amongst ourselves to deal with all of this as well, though. Now, I wasn't expecting, vehicles roll up to my house, crosses burned in the yard, I can't go to the gas station while somebody, looking at me shouting the N-word in my way, like that. But, it actually happened to a couple of friends of mine.
Yeah, no, I know.
And
that's alarming.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, there was a part of me that was kind of chomping at the bit, though, because I really had a surprise for the individual going to roll up on me. But it didn't happen, and it was still about the idea of, like, moving on with life past all that as well, because it started boiling down to what we could control as opposed to what we couldn't. And we're still going to have to kind of govern ourselves. Even after all that as well, though, I made an appeal on Facebook, and I don't know if you actually saw that post, to where I actually listed all my friends that were not African-American. And I told everybody flat out, these are my friends, these are my colleagues, I love them, I know them, and I'm not giving them up. I'm not saying goodbye to them in any way, shape, form, or fashion, okay? And so I'm not going to be like one of those individuals who's going to turn around and actually further divide what we have out there already, though, by joining in on what I consider the madness. And there were people that were thinking like that, you can't trust them, and things like that, though. Okay, that now we're actually playing that game to where, like, we think that
we're buying into the problem. Yeah.
Exactly. You're thinking that all white people are evil? No. Because that's like saying all black people are evil. No, they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And I also set the record straight up. I'm not anti-white. I'm not anti-black. I'm anti-stupid. And to me, division for no justifiable reason other than the fact that they're different is stupid.
Yeah. Well, if you look at any dictator, what they do is they get people to fight amongst themselves instead of fighting them.
Yeah.
And that's the danger in what's happening, which is why I started a Facebook page called Be a Bridge to start people talking about how to be a bridge for each other and bridge these polarities and begin to change this negative spiral that we're in, like you say, of not trusting someone just because they didn't vote for the same person you voted for, which is tough for me because a lot of the 45 supporters are so adamant and they so believe crazy stuff about the other side, about the Obamas, about the Clintons. And it's like, wait a second. But let's not talk about that. Let's not even talk about that. Let's talk about things that we can agree on. And let's find those places that we can bridge and connect and develop some understanding for each other, because otherwise we're lost as a nation and possibly even as a world, because it's happening worldwide, not just here.
Yeah, exactly. Don't get me wrong. Now, as far as terrorism, social unrest and everything as well, I'm with you on that one, though. Yes, I want to protect us. I want to protect our citizens. I want to make sure that we're safe as well, though, but not at the expense of innocent people. Because you can't ostracize an entire people based upon a religion. Because it's not even the religion. It's a facet of the ideology that makes it. That's where the threat is coming from, though.
And the more you make it a Christian Muslim battle, the more ammunition you give to ISIS and Al Qaeda. The more you feed into that. That's what they want. They want you to be anti-Muslim so that they can justify their attacks. See, they hate us. We've got to get them. It's a spiral that you cannot get out of. And going back to something I said earlier about the media and the information that we get inundated with, if you look back over the last 20 to 30 years, the truth is there is less terrorism in the whole world today than ever in history.
Exactly.
And yet that's not our perception, is it?
Exactly, because they're looking at a lot of sensationalism behind what's going on over there, though. And really,
yes,
they got it worse in the Middle East than we do here. Way worse.
Oh, yes.
Even
in the Middle East, it's less terrorism than there was 20 years ago. It's less.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
that's the part that people don't get.
there are some that feel so fearful. You know, they're fearful about it. It's kind of going back to the police shootings, though. You're fearful of how something looks and appears, and you don't even know for sure, because that's your perception of it as well, though.
That's right.
Now, I personally know some Muslims, some individuals who practice the Muslim faith. They are not sitting in their basements planning on how to blow my house up.
No.
Right. Yeah. It's an individual that simply wants to actually live their lives, accomplish their goals, raise their children,
and worship
live their
lives
out.
Yeah, and worship as they choose
as well. But the same thing you enable every American to do so, though, these individuals to be able to do the same thing, is that without fear of reprisal or fear for their lives or fear for threats or prosecution or anything else like that, though. If you really want to actually solve the problem when it comes to terrorism, you need to go after the terrorists. You need to go after go after the true source, because I don't believe in the idea of like, let's say, for example, if somebody from the, associated with the KKK or the Aryan Nation attacks me, I'm not going to go get Melody Brooke.
Right.
I'm going to go get them.
Right. Yeah, did you see there's a video going around on Facebook? I posted that video on my Be a Bridge page. That's about this guy in this. I don't recall exactly where he lives, but somewhere in the South, and he saw that there was a KKK group in his community, and he decided to deal with it by going and making friends with the leader of the KKK. So he started going over, hanging out, helping him out with chores, getting to know him, getting to know his buddies, drinking beer, having barbecues. Pretty soon, they disbanded the KKK.
Wow. Well, there was also I remember seeing a video about a Muslim woman who it was a woman. She was associated with some group, and she was protesting this mosque. And it was supposed to be a group of them that were actually assembling for that was for the assembly at the time to protest, but she wound up being the only one. And then members of the mosque would come out and talk to her. And then they brought her inside, and she talked with them even more as well. Just a few minutes turned into a span of hours, and she went home with a totally different attitude toward it as well.
Yes.
And that's the thing.
Familiarity.
You don't know. Yeah.
It's about getting to know people. Yeah.
Exactly. Unfamiliarity breeds contempt. When you educate yourself with it, when you educate yourself about certain things as well, though, you say goodbye to fear. But the simple fact is that's the one thing that conquers fear. Knowledge.
And we have to recognize that, the difficult thing is when you look at these people who are avid 45 supporters, to be able to see the humanity in them, to be able to see that they have fears that drove those choices and respond to those fears and try to understand them and have empathy for where they're coming from and help them to see that maybe, We're all afraid of those things. Let's see how we can fight them together in a way that works for all of us, and start to pull them in that way. But we can't demonize them. And this is, I've seen it, you know, it's like there's that one page that keeps going around Facebook. It's can the Republicans be any more stupid, which I hate that because that sets up a us and them mentality, right? And we have to not have an us and them mentality, especially about these things that are so, these issues where we're so polarized.
Wow, exactly. But once again, when we educate ourselves, when we, you know, embrace the other side and try to understand it, though, we don't have that issue. And we need to move, we need way more of that, way more of that. I wish we could, you know, as I said, once again, here's another magic potion I need to find.
It's what I'm trying to do with my Be a Bridge page is to start building some awareness and some conversations around how do we do that? How do we bridge those differences? And let's talk about how to start working together in respectful dialogue. And that's not been happening politically in 20 years, you know, since Fox, I'm going to blame it all on Fox, but pretty much Fox kind of started that polarization thing, right? Where it's like it began the split of the us and them, and the respectful dialogue that we used to have, and the whole Tea Party thing that grew up during that time period was all, you know, there's no dialogue. It's just I'm going to bully you and I'm going to railroad over you and you know, do what I darn well please. And there's no dialogue. There's no respect. And that has to stop.
I want to learn more about that, you know, what you got going on. And
yeah,
I want in on it.
Be sure to get on my Be a Bridge page and check out my book, Oh Wow, This Changes Everything, which talks about how our brains work in conflict and how we can move out of that egocentric cycle into a more compassionate place and start looking at everything that's happening and everybody's reactions from a more compassionate view and learn how to respond to each other more respectfully.
Okay. All right. I found your page and I'm liking it. So.
Awesome. And interact on it. Post some things. And if you find some, you know, videos or posts that are in support of what we're talking about, post them on there. Let's build a community there.
Gotcha. I'm definitely gonna wind up actually putting some posters on there though. Maybe a few thoughts and articles that I've actually seen and know of as well though. And I'm gonna be like one of your avid supporters though. You heard it here. I'm just kind of scanning through it right now though. But what I see so far is awesome. It really is though. This one posting where a young man's actually holding up. He says the misconception that the ultimate power belongs to the government because the greatest power has always and always will belong to the people. The 1% know this, which is why they divide us, so we can hate and fear each other, thereby disempowering the greatest power there is, which is the power of the people. It is critical that we stop fighting against each other and begin fighting for each other because that is what it means to be human, and that is what makes us whole. And I definitely love that. That is so cool.
That's pretty close to what the mission of Be a Bridge is.
All right. And it definitely works for me, though. Well, you know what? I enjoyed. I'm glad you got an opportunity to join us.
I'm so sorry that I couldn't get on earlier.
I know it was late though. And there were some other things that actually kind of came up as well though. They kind of like grew this up. But the good thing is though, I'm going to invite you back. Okay.
Okay.
To the
Please
show.
Please do.
Back to the show as well though, because I'm gonna do this again though. I'm gonna make this work. Okay, I'm gonna get my because I got my men's roundtable and the women's roundtables, which they've heard today though. But we had a few things that we had to actually deal with though. But never fear, we're gonna do part two of this as well though, and I'll give you the information to actually invite you. I'm cordially inviting you back again here as well though, and we also have a part three for the roundtable, which is the men's and women's roundtable, we're definitely going to actually do this as well, though, so that way the guys and the gals can actually go at it as well, though. But we're definitely going to make this happen moving forward as well, though. So, and I'm going to go ahead and get ready to wrap a few things up for the evening tonight, though, because it has been a long week. It has been so bad, but once again, there's great things that are actually happening on the horizon. Though I realize that, you know, it's that times where, like, we're really getting busy with a lot of things as well. There are a lot of things on the table. And we're going to see a lot of changes and a lot of things actually happen as well, though. But I'm definitely going to also take The Abridged, and I'm going to ask you to promote that from my show page on Facebook for you. So
wonderful. Thank you.
So yeah, exactly. I'm gonna do that for, I will personally do that with myself.
Okay.
Thank you. Put that on as well. You can have that as well. So that way we can also, you know, be. I want to make sure that, like, anything, any events, any information, anything else that comes up, any postings like that, though, I want to actually promote that through our show page as well, though. So, like, I like the idea of actually supporting any effort that brings us together. Any effort that actually like bridges the gap as well, though. And I love that. I love that Be a Breeze. I love that page. So yeah, I'm just gonna really actually try to help you further promote that cause.
Great, I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Not a problem.
Together we can make it happen.
Yeah, of course. And the more togetherness that we promote, you know, together as a people, though, when we actually stand together, though, we actually make change. We actually, like, make things happen. And
yes,
we definitely need more than that than anything else nowadays, especially. And the more we can get...
Yes, we do.
Yeah, the closer we can come to it, the better we can get with it as well, though. And the more people we bring on board with, though, the closer we get to that call. The closer we get to that call. And I want to be able to see that in my lifetime. You know,
me too.
You know, yeah, exactly, though, because I know it can happen, but I also know we're going to have to go over some obstacles in order to get it there. I'm in it for the good fight. I always have been, probably always will be. But we are truly going to work together to make that happen, and I'm going to continue this, but I'm always going to want to basically be in the type of work to actually promote, you know, the positive side of life anyway, though, because we got more than enough negative already. And I, for one, truly had enough. So and then I fear for, like, you know, my children's future, my everybody else's children's futures. Well, the next generation, what are they going to be actually dealing with? What are they going to be inheriting to? And to me, that's a concern. So anything that I can put in the arsenal to help bridge that gap, though, I'm all for it. I'm totally all for it. But we're coming up on the 2-minute mark here, and I want to go ahead and actually thank you for joining me. I want to thank everybody else who's actually listened. And yes, you're coming back to the show, Melody. So put that in your middle row.
Great.
Exactly. So we're going to go ahead and close out, and I want to thank everybody that actually listened to the show. If you didn't actually catch the live show, you can catch the archives on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I want to thank, like I said, my guest, actress, producer, and all-around good person, Melody Brooke. And we will definitely be putting together the official roundtable, you know, at a later date as well. Then I'll keep you posted on that on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and on the Blog Talk Radio Network. So with 90 seconds on the dock, I want to actually thank everybody and, like, wish everybody a great rest of the week, great weekend, and get us back here in 2 weeks for the Mike Henderson Show here on blogtalkradio.com. And like my man Deadpool says, cue the music.